How do you answer the kind of scientific questions that children ask, like what is color or sound or energy? By having scientists make short videos and have them judged by 11-year-olds, of course. It's the Flame Challenge from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. It's all new and all blue. Join us. You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio from Northern California. I'm Dave Schloem. Our guest this week is Kate Fulham. She's the communications manager for the Alan Alda Center for the Communication of Science at Stony Brook University in New York. But I like to think of her as the keeper of the flame, as in the Flame Challenge, where scientists make short videos or write essays on a theme that would be understandable for an 11-year-old. I recently heard Alda on another public radio program, and at one point, the host was looking at his notes. Alda commented nicely that he found that distracting from their natural conversation, which had been flowing smoothly. He did it to make a point about the importance of listening for communicators. And so, inspired by Mr. Alda, I threw away my notes for this interview and just had a conversation with my new friend, Kate Fulham. And we're talking to Kate Fulham. She's from the Alan Alda Center for the Communication of Science. Did I get that right, Kate?
Almost. It's the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science, and we're at Stony Brook University out in Long Island in New York.
And just briefly tell us, what do you do there?
I'm the communications manager, so I handle general communications for the center. I help with online learning with our faculty to develop some sessions after scientists are trained in person, and I also help to run the Flame Challenge.
We'll talk about the Flame Challenge in a few minutes, but what I'd like to know, what's the mission statement? Why did Alan Alda set up this center?
Well, we all know that science is very interesting to learn about, and learning about just generally how the world works is a terrific and beautiful thing. But there are some practical considerations as well for scientists who need to affect policy or apply for grants to have funding to do their research, or connecting with other researchers to make scientific breakthroughs, and just in general to communicate with the public. So when Alan Alda had worked on Scientific American Frontiers, the long-running PBS show, he noticed that scientists would go in and out of lecture mode, and they kind of forgot about the joy that they really had for their work. So he, as an actor, kind of applied some techniques in terms of improvisation that helped scientists to break out of that lecture mode and really just start to tell their stories. And I think that's really where the success came from with Scientific American Frontiers, that he was actually able to engage with people, and in turn, those scientists connected with the public on the other end of the television screen. So Alan really has been interested in science since he was a young boy, and he thought, what if we change the way that scientists and medical professionals are educated so that communication training would become part of that education? And when scientists and medical professionals were finished with their formal degrees and the technical knowledge, they'd also be able to tell people about what they're doing, and that we could actually apply that science a bit easier in, every day.
And how exactly does that work? Do you reach out to the scientific community, to schools, or do they come to you because they're just interested in improving their communications?
Well, we've had really great success with word of mouth from people who have been trained in the Alda Method, which is the foundation of that is improvisational theater exercises that really help people to connect on a basic level. People come out of these trainings and they are totally changed. It's really, really interesting and an honor that times that I've witnessed it myself. We've had great success, just people who have been trained, like I said, word of mouth, requesting workshops. We've got actually this week a big boot camp on our campus here at Stony Brook University, where we've got 32 scientists from around the world who are being trained in a 5-day experience. And of course, when you have a superstar like Alan Alda going around and, you know, talking about this, people tend to hear about it as well. So we're lucky we haven't had to do too much advertising in order to have a really great response in terms of the need for this type of training.
And you mentioned the boot camp, which that's going on now. That must be keeping you really busy. So we appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us here. Because I know you're really busy today.
I know I've been tough to nail down, but I'm happy to always talk about the great programs that we're doing. So thanks for being patient with my schedule.
Sure. And just from my own experience with doing this for many years, I can tell you, and Nolan could probably do the same, is that a lot of times when we get a scientist on air, and we aren't there together in studio, they're on, you know, just like we are now, you're on a telephone line. Mm-hmm. Is they will get very enthusiastic and just start going on and on and on and on and on and never give me a chance to, you know, interject a question or ask for clarification. And just after a while, I let them tucker themselves out and then say, well, let's start over again. But you got to give me a chance to talk to you and ask questions.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And I think, trained scientists, they're really taught to report the things that they have found out that they know. They're not taught to tell the stories behind what didn't really work. And so I think that there is a sense of vulnerability in that, and that vulnerability is what allows people to tell their stories. The improvisational theater exercises that we use help people to tap into that vulnerability, and often it can be an emotional experience as well as just, you know, improving your skills. So I could see why somebody would, you know, it's a lot of nerves, a lot of vulnerability to just keep blabbering on.
Yeah, and a lot of it is just they get enthusiastic and they don't mm-hmm. realize it's like, well, I need to communicate with you. And they think that communication is just them getting out as much information as fast as they can.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and there is something really nice about giving yourself a break from spewing out the knowledge and actually seeing when someone's right in front of you, how is that person responding to what I'm saying? Are they understanding? And actually, Alan's book that just came out, the title of it is If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? So it's interesting. The methods really teach scientists, and, you know, something that I have to be reminded of too every day as just a human being and a natural introvert, to, have that two-way street. So I'm happy to be talking and practicing that myself today.
Okay, you mentioned the Flame Challenge. Explain to us what that is.
Well, the Flame Challenge is such a great event. It's probably a 9-month affair for us. It started out in 2011. The organization started in 2009, but really originated years and years before then. Alan Alda, when he was 11 years old, he was interested in science, as I had mentioned, and he was always fascinated with the flame at the end of a candle. Like, he's wondering, what is that? You know, he asked his science teacher, what is a flame, really? Like, what is this thing? And his teacher told him, it's oxidation. So then Alan came to terms with the fact that now he had two questions, what's a flame and what is oxidation? And realized, I think, at that moment, and didn't, you know, do anything with it until many years later, that we really, as scientists and as teachers, needed to be able to explain things in a way that others can understand. A lot of the improv exercises that we do actually focus around responsibility for understanding. If somebody doesn't understand what I'm saying, it's my responsibility, not their responsibility. And so the Flame Challenge, it actually challenges scientists throughout the world to explain a technical concept like what is a flame to 11-year-olds throughout the world. So we actually, in written or a visual format. It can be video or infographic. Scientists submit their answers to a question, and this year was, what is energy? And then the contest is actually judged after everything goes through for scientific accuracy. 11-year-olds judge the contest. So it's a lot of fun to see what they have to say about the different entries.
Okay, I got a question. Where do you get your 11-year-olds? Do you go to the 11-year-old store? Or?
Yeah, we've had great success over the years with Alan doing publicity on this, and we actually have them register. This year, we actually had 21,000 students judge the contest from 380 different schools throughout the year. Throughout the world.
Wow. Who's eligible to make these videos or write these essays? Just scientists?
Yep, they have to be active scientists, in a scientific discipline, science, technology, engineering, or math. They can be from the graduate student level all the way through a senior scientist.
And how many entries did you get this year, like, for the video contest?
I'm not sure what the breakup was, but we actually had 140 different entries for this year. Now, that number is going down while the number of students is actually going up. So we're taking a look in the future to figure out how we can tip the scales and get more scientists involved.
Have you ever thought about going the other way around and having the 11-year-olds make some videos and having the scientists judge them?
That's a really interesting idea. I think our mission is really focused on having scientists be trained and have opportunities to practice their communication skills, but mm-hmm. It could be an interesting way to flip that around, so I'll have to bring that to the team for discussion.
Or maybe just, part of one of your workshops, you could do something like that.
Yeah, that's really an interesting idea. I like it. So fun to see how the kids respond, too. They really have a lot of interesting comments.
I discovered the Flame Challenge in 2014 when Diana Cowan won it for What is Color?
Okay.
And that video just so impressed me. She's such an engaging YouTube personality, Physics Girls is what she's known as on YouTube. And I've shown that video to multiple levels from elementary school on through high school, and all age levels connect with that video and are always really interested in watching that.
Yeah, Diana is a terrific communicator, and she's had great success with her Physics Girl YouTube channel, so definitely recommend taking a look at that and a lot of the other entries that we've had over the years. We've got our website, flamechallenge.org, and you can go there and check out all those past entries.
Well, tell us about this year's winner. Who was the top entry this year?
This year we had actually two women scientists won the contest. One is Joanna Howes from Mangerton, Australia, and she was the video entry winner. She is a chemist at the University of Wollongong in Mangerton, Australia, and she did a great video, and she... One thing that we encourage is to use examples. So Joanna had a great example talking about energy from the sun, growing plants, and then her chickens are eating the food from the plants and getting an egg, and then that translates into her eventually making a cupcake, which who doesn't love cupcakes? Mm-hmm. So she used a great example to help the children get excited and involved in learning about what is energy. And then we had a writer and former civil engineer from Hillsboro, Oregon, Hannah Holt, who won the written entry. And she used a great example about energy for a babysitter, trying to get your babysitter to get off the couch and how you might try different types of energy in order to make that happen. So the entries often have a bit of humor to them or an example that's relatable. Creating common ground through humor or through examples are techniques that we definitely emphasize.
I think humor is really important, and because a lot of people are so intimidated by science. Maybe they had a bad experience with high school chemistry or something like that. I used to joke around when I was teaching chemistry. If I went to a party and somebody would ask me, well, what do you teach? And you say chemistry, then they kind of walk away. So, right. So I learned to say, I'm an art teacher. Would you like to talk about, you know, finger painting and the Impressionists? And, oh, yeah, sure.
Exactly. A lot of times when we help scientists build their story, we help them get to the final outcome. So if you're a chemist, you may not say, I'm a chemist. You could say, you know, my work involves trying to isolate different compounds to create better drugs to cure cancer or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So we help them get to the outcome. I think a lot of people are scared to say that, though, because in the scientific process, you're testing out things, that, and you may or may not get to that drug that's going to cure cancer. And so you don't want people to hear that and sort of overpromise.
Yeah, but you're working on it.
Yeah. Have you had that experience in your work?
Yes. Mostly since I'm an educator, you know, that somebody had a bad experience in school with a science teacher. They had a bad experience with physics. The problem solving flummoxed them or something like that. So I always try to use humor with my students. And I do use a lot of videos. I let them watch YouTube's physics videos, you know, every week we watch a little bit just because there's lots of good humor in it, and they seem to really connect with those. And I've this year started encouraging them to make their own videos. They did them on thermodynamics, and they weren't very good, but they were funny and they were trying, and I think they learned something just trying to, you know, they learned how hard it is to make a video that's good.
Right, yeah.
One of the things I liked about the video you mentioned as your winner was at the end where she's chasing the chicken around the yard.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
And she said, when I met her a few weeks ago at the World Science Festival, she said, you know, that's my mom's chicken. And she was so upset that I didn't put the chicken in the credits. So we have to give a shout out to Violet once again.
Violet the chicken.
The chicken.
And are her other chickens, you know, named like blue, orange, yellow? Green.
I forgot to ask her.
Indigo.
Maybe we can tweet her and find out.
She got the Roy G. Biv thing going with the chickens.
We'll have to find out how many other chickens. Maybe they'll make an appearance on social media. Now, something that you said about having your students watch videos and create videos, isn't it so interesting how the world is connected by social media now? That, you know, you can get any kind of information, or you can go on YouTube or share something on Facebook, and it's just science is becoming so much more accessible.
It is, and, you know, one of the things that I find amazing is how many people there are that are interested in communicating their love of science through that video format. There's mm-hmm. several, you know, really good YouTube channels. We've featured a few on this program, like It's Okay to Be Smart with Joe Hansen, Physics Girl. They you know, really, Minute Physics, that they're trying to, you know, and a lot of it comes from their love of science and wanting to communicate that passion to others.
Yeah, we've had last year's winner, Nick Weckitzer from Michigan. He has a great physics YouTube channel called The Science Asylum. And Joanna Howes, this year's winner, has Class 509 Science History as her YouTube channel. So it's really becoming more popular way. And I think, you know, scientists are learning to be able to communicate in that manner and really become more vulnerable and showcase their stories and sort of say, you know what, it's only a real mistake if you don't learn from an error or something that you made.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. I'm Dave Schlom. And our guest is Kate Fulham from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. Stay with us. And welcome back to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom. Let's get back to our chat with Kate Fulham from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University in New York.
Well, one of the things I enjoy on this show is when we get a scientist on who's very enthusiastic and passionate about their work, and most of them are, it's fun to be able to connect with them and have them share that joy and you know, let our listeners in on the world that they live in, because they love going to work every day. You know, it's like, what are you going to do today? I'm going to go work in an office at a computer. Well, what are you going to do today? I'm going out in the field to drop seismometers around our test station around the San Andreas Fault because we're monitoring fault motion and to get ready for the big one. That's a pretty interesting job.
Yeah, it's so interesting, though sometimes the novelty of that is lost on the person who actually is doing the job. I came back recently from a trip into New York City for work, and I sat next to this man, you know, looked like a construction worker on the train, and we're all looking at our phones. I look around, everyone's looking at their phone, and I said, you know, we'll probably be on this train for an hour next to each other. Do you mind if we just chat with each other for a little while? And he said, oh, no, I don't mind at all. I think that would be nice. So I started talking with him, and he said to me, I'm a mason. I work in the city on large buildings. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. Like, where? He said, well, I worked on the St. Patrick's Cathedral and the Museum of Natural History. And I said, oh, my gosh, do you repair gargoyles? And he said, well, yeah, sometimes I do. And you know, someone that just looks like your average person, and he really didn't think it was a big deal. By the end of the conversation, he had this renewed passion for his work, and he said, you know, thanks a lot, because I really forgot how cool my job is.
Wow.
So that's one of the things that happens for us as well when you see people going through this communication training. They really renew their passion, and they're reminded that what they're doing is so important and, you know, interesting. And so that's great, too. It's happening to me right now, talking about what I do with you. So thanks.
Oh, sure. And I'm enjoying talking to you.
Great.
In fact, I was just thinking to myself, you know, if I would have had the choice between you could interview Alan Alda or Kate, I would choose Kate now.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know about that.
Well, yeah.
Pretty great.
You know, I'm not just saying that. It's been enjoyable talking to you. Anybody can get excited talking to Alan Alda. I mean, like, oh, my God, Alan Alda, Hawkeye, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know you from anything, but you're a very interesting person to talk to.
Well, thank you so much, and I've had so much fun talking with you. So did we cover everything that you wanted?
One last thing I'd like to know is, for listeners that would like to check out some of the videos, can we see some of the entries from this year on your website?
You definitely can. You can go to flamechallenge.org, and that'll bring you to the interior pages of our Alda Center website. So you can check out, you know, get more information about the Flame Challenge, look at the winners, the past challenges. You can even submit a question if you have between 9 and 12 years old and you want to have your parents or your teacher help you submit a question, then we'll take those as well and have consideration of other questions that we can answer into the future.
I think one of the most important differences between scientists and people who don't appreciate science or not scientists. We all are scientists in a way, but scientists are the people who don't stop asking those childlike questions as they go through life.
That's right. That curiosity.
They just take them to another level and really try to get to the heart of, you know, why, you know, a great question is, why is the sky dark at night? Well, because the sun's not there, dummy. You know, but that's a lot deeper question than that.
Right, exactly. Then you can get into physics of light and really interesting concepts if you really want to dig into it. Well, so I have a 4-year-old daughter, and since I've started working at the Alda Center, I think I am a much better communicator even because of her asking me, it's always why this or why that. And sometimes I say, hey, you know what? We're going to answer that question, but I need to ask someone else too.
Yeah.
And that resourcefulness and being curious, I think, is so important just for any age.
And I think as parents and educators and just adults, we need to make sure that we don't shut down that curiosity especially in young girls, because they, mm-hmm. for a variety of social and societal reasons, they tend to start out with that same curiosity. And then by the time they get to be in middle school, high school, they have shut that part of themselves down and they don't get as successful in the sciences and mathematics as boys do. And that's a real battle that needs to be fought.
Yeah, I mean, I know I connected with somebody recently from the National Park Service or National Forestry Service, and they actually have these great playing cards that are featuring scientists in real life. They're like trading cards, and they have a pack that is specifically women in science. And I know a lot of people are working on this. Even on campus here at Stony Brook, we've got the Women in Science Engineering WISE program to encourage young women to get into the sciences. And I recently joined the New York Academy of Sciences NEXT Scholar program for serving as a mentor for a young woman who's an undergraduate pursuing a science degree. So, you know, there's a lot of good work being done to try to increase that capacity for girls having confidence in entering the sciences and engineering, math, medical, everything.
Well, science is really just at its heart, it's a love of nature. And mm-hmm. girls and boys all need to be encouraged to be lifelong learners about nature.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Kate Fulham, it's been a real joy talking to you, and best of luck with your work at the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science.
Thank you. And just as a final, I want to say thank you so much to you for having me on, for Alan, for creating this terrific organization. And I just want to mention a couple of people. Rachel Kosha is our graduate assistant who did a phenomenal job supporting running the contest day to day. And we have three sponsors, the American Chemical Society, the American Advancement, American Association for the Advancement of Sciences, even Alan Alda messes that one up, AAAS, longtime sponsors for us, and IBM.
Okay. Well, hey, great talking to you. And, you know, go out there to boot camp and get those people communicating science. Well, or just communicating with each other.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care, Kate.
Bye.
Thanks to our guest, Kate Fulham, from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University in New York. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio in Northern California. Check out this and wonderful past episodes you may have missed at mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Follow us on Twitter at @NSPRNews and me at Dave Schlom. Our communications coordinator is Casey Gardner. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, was written and performed by Matt Schiltz. Thanks, as always, to our producer and engineer, Mr. Nolan Ford, on the board. And as always, I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.